So at that time, I was traveling between London and Beijing for about 2 years, trying to raise the finance. And my personal life became a mess, a complete mess.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Making It Women in Film. My name's Savita, and I'm a writer, lover of film, and the host of this podcast, which features weekly interviews with women working across the film and TV industry in front and behind the camera. Now, this week, I got to sit down with Chinese filmmaker and the founder of the Filming East Festival in the UK, Ishi Son. She was really interesting to speak with, and I hope you all enjoy this episode because we spoke about everything from crossing borders, establishing yourself, keeping on fighting even when it looks like you're failing, indie financing, and even sea lions. Yeah, sea lions. Just keep on listening, why don't you? But before I get to that, I want to give a massive thank you to Tracy Johnson, who's listening in from the UK. She writes, I'm a writer of literary horror fiction, as well as writing on film and for film with Troy TV UK, for which I also do some presenting. I didn't go freelance until I was 42, and I'm now in a really exciting position with my work, turning my writing into film projects and retraining in continuity supervision at 50, so it's never too late to try something new. You can find her on Instagram at Dr. Tracy Heather Johnson and listen to her stories on Flights on Dark Wings podcast, available on all the usual platforms. They've live streamed a launch and two new stories coming in March. Now, if you enjoy our show and would like to be featured in our next listener shout out, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and throw up a screenshot of you listening to us on Instagram. You can tag us at Making a Woman in Film, and we'll come say hi over there. All right, without further ado, let's just get into it. Enjoy.
My name is Ishi Sun. I'm a writer director from Beijing, China, and I've been living and working in London for about 15 years. So I make feature films at the moment. I make two films which are going to be released this year, both of them. So typically I'm a film writer and director at a very early stage, I would say.
That's really exciting. So tell me, when did you first know that you were a filmmaker?
I was always engaged with stories, more in books, novels, and manga. Manga was very popular in mainland China. And because we have a very big stress from the university exams, so we really spend almost all of our time on doing the study to pass the exams. So at that time, I don't remember I have much time in cinemas. And also, we don't have a lot of opportunity to go to cinema to watch films from all over the world. It's nothing like today in China or in London. So I think I really grew up with books, but always wonderful stories. I think I got most of my inspiration from books and the real life experience rather than cinema or films.
That's really interesting. So when did you realize that that was what you wanted to study if you didn't have that much access to it?
To be honest, I'm really keen in literature. So in university, I wanted to be a writer at the first place, and all of my like parents and friends around me, they encouraged me to study literature. So later on, I might be choose writing or being a writer as my career. But at that time, it's just about when you're a teenager, you are really attracted by something from a new trend. Like I mentioned, that's manga. So at that time, I would like to be using my skills of drawing and writing. And I think one day I will be a manga author. So I studied broadcasting media in university because I think all this related to media and storytelling. But later on, I found I'm not only enjoy pictures and books, but more about everything like visual parts, sound, working with people, and telling stories for wider audience, and all this come together, that's cinema.
Yeah, no, of course, it all ties in together. And so you got interested in cinema and theatre, and then documentary. You went to London to study documentary filmmaking. Why London, and What was that experience like moving from China to England?
In terms of London, it's like at that time, not only me, I mean, a friend, we had some resource to watch the BBC documentaries. The quality, even today, is one of the most excellent, well-made documentaries. And I think I would like to equip myself with the real skills to make that type of high-quality products, no matter it's films, cinema, or documentaries. I just would like to do it in the best way. And also, when I get an opportunity to study abroad, and I obviously I can go to other countries, but I would like to go to England, go to the UK. I think because of the culture, I really would like to go to visit the country. From my very, very young age, I got familiar with the literature works from Shakespeare to Agatha Christie, and I think that would be my prioritized place to go. Then, yeah, that's how I end up with London.
Yeah, yeah. Had you been to London beforehand?
Not at all. Yes, everything was in the classroom, and that's what we experienced. Then that's a very first step of freedom, is to choose the subject we are going to study. And to me, very luckily, I can choose the country.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's always a big deal to move to a different country, to even just move out to go to university for a lot of people. But then moving to a completely different continent is a bigger thing as well. Making that journey, I mean, I'm sure there were some culture differences as well when you came to London. What were some of the ways that you realized people talk differently about cinema in London than in Beijing?
China, I would say, is changing so rapidly in the past 20 years. In China, the cinema culture and how people talk about films or cinema, even the habit of sparing their spare time in theater or cinema, have been so different during the past 20 years. So comparing to 15 years ago, when I firstly came to England, I found you can have everything in the cinema. And you have the art house and the mainstream and global audience and global products on the big screen. That was amazing. I used to spend a whole night in cinema, watch three films in different screening rooms. And to me, that's like, wow. But in China at that time, we won't have much options in cinema, very limited. And when we were younger, we didn't have much time, like I just mentioned before. So the personal experience had been changed completely. And later on, after graduation, my friends and I founded a film festival called Filming East Festival. It's still there today. So it's been 15 years old and growing. So in the very first year, it's 2007, we started the film festival. We were the only one, apart from in the old days, they have the Hong Kong film screening events or some very special East Asian film events, one-off events in Leicester Square, organized by some Jackie Chan or Jet Li film fans, Kung Fu film special screening, that's it. But about Chinese cinema history and the various different films from East Asian countries, they're not there. I mean, it's very, very limited. So when we started Filming East Festival, that was in Oxford. And I still remember we had a very grand opening and the mayor came there to have a celebration with us. And we have a press conference. We got all of the media coverage and we thought, whoa, that's a great start. However, the next day was our first screening day. And in the cinema, we only have three audience. And really, that's three. And I almost cried. And then we did a street interview. And when we asked people, do you know anything about Chinese cinema? And they have no idea. And they said, oh, is there a film industry in China? That's amazing. That's 15 years ago. Like after 15 years in London, if you ask people, they know where to watch the most popular Chinese blockbusters because there's a distributor who only sell the Chinese films in the UK, and their cinemas, they are screening the big Chinese films for Chinese audience and international audience. So things have completely changed from the market side. And from the like the event like us, we're charitable, we may screen something outside of the blockbusters. And we have our event partners from BAFTA, from BFI. And last time, that's before COVID, and our screening event, we got a full house in NFT1 in British Film Institute. That's one of the largest cinema in the UK. And we got a full house, and 95% of it are from the Western audience. So they're not UK Chinese audience, or they're not Chinese. It means, yes, we are very happy to see this difference, these changes. That's what happened there. And here in Beijing, amazingly, can you believe that I'm now in Beijing? I'm not in London now. I'm now in Beijing. So I'm traveling a lot. Like a month ago, I was in London. I just came back. And the cinemas in Beijing today, I would say there's a big space to welcome much more films from all over the world, but still it's nothing the same comparing to when I was a child, and it's part of people's entertainment, their spare life, how they spend time and how they go dating. So yeah, it's the same as any other modern big cities. And considering China is big and we have villages, small towns, and I would say the film market is huge, and people, they've already started looking at it. So to us filmmakers, it's good, there are opportunities, and that one of the main reasons after 15 years today, I spend a lot of time back home as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And I'm glad you said you're in Beijing, because I was like, where is she getting the sunlight from? Because the sun is not even up yet. And I look so pale and you have this beautiful sunlight. So that makes a lot more sense now. So that's really incredible with the Filming East Festival. I think a lot of people, you know, would struggle to keep on going with it after, you know, only having three people in the audience. But you clearly knew that this was something you wanted to keep doing. That's really amazing. And it's paid off, you know, like that hard work and consistency has paid off. What was it that made you decide that you were going to keep doing it again and again anyway?
Today is a self-funded Filming East Festival. From day one till today, we have the changing partners from Screen Source. 15 years ago, we started from with them. And then we worked with Film London, BFI, BAFTA, Bank of China, and a lot of people and private investors, sponsors, even supermarket sponsors. So we just appreciate every single support from everywhere. That's how we deliver culture event. I think that's because we have the same mission, is to do something good about introducing a piece of culture, which is not that really can be known easily in the general public. So it's simple. It's a simple concept, but it's a lot of input in it. The reason we are keeping doing it, one is we are still here. I'm here and my team is here. And we always have the new blood coming. That's the overseas Chinese students. And so our team is always refreshing, always new, always energetic, and they got a lot of experience on this platform. And after that, they go everywhere, different countries to do different work. But the 1 or 2 years experience from Filming East to get them to know the UK audience better. And I think that's good. So people who is doing it, they are here. Another reason is the good films are there. So we are not only choosing from the new films, but also the historical from the archive. And gradually, more and more, I found there are wonderful films, even I didn't have much knowledge about, but actually they are there in Chinese film archive from even like 50s, 60s, even earlier. And we can always bring them back and introduce them to the wider audience, so people know in the cinema history they are a bit of shining part from China. And so we got some good films. Another thing is I just appreciate our partnership with the UK organizations, and they are very supportive, like BFI, the best cinema, the best people, and they are our backers, which is good. And today, since I'm in Beijing, I'm meeting a lot of Chinese organizations. So I'm sure in future, we can bring in the new partnership to make it even bigger. Really, financially, we need support, especially during the pandemic. Then we are trying to build up online platform. And last year, we tried with two event partners. One is CineAsia, is a distributor of Asian film. And we tried to build an online platform, and it was successful. We screened a lot of Chinese films, 50, and delivered workshops online, more than 10. However, financially, it's very challenging. So this year, we will find a way to do it again. But to everyone, it's a side project, it's charity. Like everyone else, I think everyone is in the industry. We have a way to make a living in the film industry. That's what people do. We do something good. Asian community. Yeah, filmmakers, okay, let me, right. Yes, that's a very good question. But the thing is, I don't really work with any Asian filmmakers in the UK. That's true. No one. Yeah, I don't think there is an Asian filmmakers community in the UK. I know everyone from it, but there's not a community. It's like, because you know, there are many people.
Yes, exactly.
Their parents are from Hong Kong.
You mentioned,
and they
you
are British-born Chinese.
It's also a good place for all the overseas students who come
British
to study
born
film
Asian
in the
filmmakers.
UK.
They are few.
When you first
I think I know
came
most
to
of
the
them.
UK, what was the Asian filmmaking community like in the UK?
They're English native, yeah, and they're not many. They are excellent people, very, very
yeah, like
good.
Was there a filmmaking?
He's one of the best, and he was my DP in my first feature, Susu. So people like him, there are a few others,
that's
like
interesting.
Editors and actors. But yes, they are not many.
Wow,
over the years, I have encountered. Different waves of Chinese immigrants to open restaurants, or later generation who went during the other events. And most recently is Asian new money immigrants. And so because I've been there for a long time, so I really, really encountered with them. Given that, I think, They are very different. It's because I have a very original script. It's about their story. They are not filmmakers, but about these people, I do understand them. I think if you remember, there used to be a popular Hollywood movie called Crazy Rich Asians. Yeah, like this. And my story is about a comedy the British Asians. So I think if people, they're interested in this group of people, then maybe one day we can make this story to a film and to showcase their journey, because it's quite dramatic. And could lead us to some deeper thinking about today's world, how to live with neighbors and how to communicate. I think, considering our recent heavily shaped world by COVID and by Brexit and a lot of issues, I think this type of story has to be told. Although my previous films and my current work is all about genre films, but this is an art house. It's about a story about immigrants. And we traveled around the festivals on pitching and script sessions. And we've raised the first money and we plan to film it last year, but because of COVID, it's hold up. We'll see. It's changed my plan completely. Otherwise, I might just working on the post of this film called The Remarriage in London. That was the plan. But now, it's a new situation.
Yeah, wow. So you mentioned genre films, which again, like documentary, genre films, so interesting. Do you think you use any of the things that you learned from documentary filmmaking when you do all your other films, even though that they're very different types of filmmaking? I'm sure there's like skills that you bring with you.
I think it's a perspective, or see the angle I see people and the world. I think I indeed learned this from documentary filmmaking. And I'm always interested in the changing situation of people. Because of that, actually, now I have a mentor from Directors UK. So we enter a kind of scheme called Inspire. Like they pair a very established director and a younger director by the mentorship, so we can make something inspiring together. And my mentor is Charles Sturridge, and he is type of director who is really looking at the detailed changing situation of people. So he could make all type of films and TV, from the historical period drama to the modern times detective stories. I think that's amazing. I'm soaking in his works. And at the same time, he encouraged me to keep making low budget documentaries. So now I may make some passion project by myself, self-funded, but I can make any story I like that would be documentary, and I can always learn from it, because sometimes when you keep working on the commissioned works and the so-called mainstream stuff, then gradually you might forget what's the core of the story. But documentary can always drag me back to look at things in depth, I would say. Especially I learned editing skills from documentary. I didn't really train as a as an editor to cut feature films, but actually I make money from cutting films. Recently, I cut films for Yanagawa. It's a newly made, that's a Zhang Lu. Zhang Lu is a Chinese director, worked in South Korea and Japan, and Yanagawa, I was editing on it. But I think the reason I could really contribute on such a very wonderful made film is because documentary filmmaking experience really, really like me qualified to understand different types of stories and to do it in a very neat. But I really like narrative stories. I like romantic stories and all this type of genre films. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy genre films.
No, of course. How do you decide what genre a movie should be? When you find the story, where is it, this should be a psychological thriller, this should be a comedy? Because many stories can be told in different perspectives.
If I look back, the first film, Susu, is a psychological thriller, and a lot of people say it's a horror. It's because I'm a fan of this type of films. And at that time, my producer, Norman J. Warren, and he's an iconic filmmaker in horror films in Britain. And everything comes together. It's like a fit. Then we decided to make a horror film together. And he taught me, you are right to be a horror film director. And I believe so. So I just put my 5 years time on making my first film. That was a very unique experience. So step by step, we would like to make it rightly. I used everything I learned from the previous lessons, books Norman taught me and other filmmakers' experience. I do it in a very certain way, but instead of doing it the documentaries I've done before, it's everything just follow my emotion or follow my feelings.
Going about funding stuff like that, it's always difficult to make a movie. What was the process like in actually getting, the money, the resources, the people to make this happen?
We experience all kind of hardship on a financing stage of Susu. It was a pain. So dealing with money is a real pain, not the actual filmmaking, I think. A lot of filmmakers experience. And that was what I didn't prepare. So at that time, I traveling between London and Beijing for about 2 years trying to raise the finance. And my personal life became a mess, a complete mess. So during that time, my producers, Norman J. Warren and Mr. Lee from China, they are my backers. Mr. Lee came on board because he liked this script, and Norman J. Warren because I worked with him as his associate producer before. So we know each other. He knows my previous works and my style of filmmaking. So finally, the project took off from the ground up to sourcing some money. Not a lot, so it's a super low budget film because it will be released on Netflix very soon. To me, it's no matter the money is big or small, if there's some money in place, then we just go ahead to do it. Very importantly, the money is a proper investment. It's not friends' money or my own money. It's because we would like to do it rightly. If there is a proper investment, then we know. We are doing a business. We need to be responsible for every penny we spend. And that works. If you use your own money, you will be just worried about different things. That's how we get the money right. First of all, a good script and some real people, they know you, they trust you. I think that's very important. So to me, the biggest thank you would go to my producers, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, it's me, Evita from the future. I just wanted to check in on you. Are you staying hydrated, caffeinated, and most importantly, enjoying the show? If so, why not take a screenshot right now? Slap it up in the Instagram story and tag us at Making It Women of Film. I will personally come thank you and share it on our story. This season, we really want to incorporate you listeners into the show. You're the reason we're still doing this, which is why, from now on, we'll give 2 random follow shoutouts every episode. All you have to do is follow us on Instagram, tag us in a post, and you might be chosen. We also want to hear from you if you have any feedback. So, if you have anything you want to say, anything you want to listen to more, anything you don't want to listen to, any questions you have for our guests or for us, you can email us at miwif.feedback@gmail.com. Now, good luck and thanks for listening. Now, let's get back into the interview. Earlier, when you talked about what made you fall in love with film and the idea of making movies, it was a lot about working with people. Now, on your feature debut, what was it like working with actors and directing them and pulling it all together?
I think choosing actors is the most important part of the job to a director. Getting the actors right, then you may already get half of the job done. So we spend a lot of time on casting and audition. And then when we get the cast, then I knew how the final work would look like. So I cast everyone, even the one without a line, then I cast everyone for low budget films. By the way, it's completely different for my second feature film I made in China called Legend of the Ocean. We work in a different way with actors because we don't have the luxury of getting prepared or casting everyone. So different film has different situation. And also when you get more experience, maybe you don't need to do that. But for the first film, what I learned is really appreciate the time working with actors, choose the best, the most suitable ones, and do rehearsal, auditions, rehearsals, and everything. And I think more importantly is to get yourself trained as an actor before everything. I did a proper course in master course in London for about 2 years with one of the best acting trainer. He's so professional. His name is Terry Smith. I can recommend, highly recommend, and he's good. And I think learn the proper master acting and everything else, read a lot, is helpful. Then the actors will know your director, but you know what you do, you understand what they do, then the communication won't go wrong. I think that's very important. And to my second film, Legend of the Ocean, it's so difficult because our main cast are kids, they're children. So people always say the most difficult, challenging part of filmmaking is working with kids and animals. And Legend of the Ocean is all about kids and animals. Sea animals. We cast animals, by the way. I cast the sea lions. There are several sea lions, and I need to choose which one should be our hero.
How do you do that? How do you pick the right sea lion?
I would say, in the end, I would say I know everything about sea lions, what they like and what they don't like, who is a girl, who is a boy, and because normally people won't tell who is a boy or a girl and where they're from, and if they're happy, if they're not happy, and what's the situation. And I do something to let them know what to do, or I don't do anything. I mean, that's another type of skill set, and I really enjoy it. I mean, working with animals used to be my dream, because my first job is a producer director of WildAid. WildAid makes public announcement. Actually, it's like commercials, short charity videos with stars like Harrison Ford, Kate Hudson, with them. So, and to support protecting endangered species. So I used to work with them for a long time, and working with animals or protecting animals was my dream, and I feel like a dream comes true. But working with them is challenging, is another thing. But working with kids are very, I like it. A lot of people, they don't like it. And even people in our crew, some of them, they feel like very tiring, very difficult. But to be honest, I think as a director, my time with them are limited. And I don't need patience. I really don't need patience. Don't need to be that patient, but I need to be clever. I need to be a very attractive and clever adult so that the kids will listen. Otherwise, they would think you are boring and you are old and you are just silly, and they don't listen because they are very strict. It's like adults, they might hide an actor. They was okay, you are director, then fine. But the kids won't give you any room to do that. Then you need to be really good. But the other people in our crew, like the casting director and producers, they do need a lot of kindness and patience to the kids. So they had a challenging time. I was fine.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, how old were the kids? Like, what was the age range?
10. 10. Yeah. If they're younger, maybe maybe they are less challenging because they think, okay, but they're 10. They know everything. They are just, I think today's kids, they are just like adults. They know everything. They have all the channels to understand the world even more than you. And they are so clever. They speak more than 3 different languages, and they can do dancing, drawing, piano, and sports, and AI. So yeah, it needs to be good to be working with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds super exciting, and that's being released this year as well, did you say?
Yes, in summer holiday time in cinemas in China. And we would like to introduce the film to other countries outside of China too, because it's about children and animals, and we hope it could go a bit further. Yeah, international language, because in the film, like children, they talk to animals. So we believe that's international language.
No, definitely. And, you know, there's been such a huge interest in Asian cinema in the past, like 5 years, that has really blown up across the world. You know, you have Parasite winning Oscars, and this year it's Drive My Car by Hamaguchi, which is like taking a lot of awards, which is a Japanese movie. So there is definitely that interest. At the same time, there also seems to be a lot of Western movies that take a lot of Chinese culture into it, like Shang-Chi and Mulan. What do you think about movies that are not made in China but are about China?
I think that's amazing. I mean, that's because like people, they got more interest in our country and culture. I think that's good. That's part of the changing situation. I think the challenge would be when things come to Chinese stories, it's fine. I watched Mulan, the Disney Mulan in a cinema, and really like it. I think it's well made. And even I can see the idea behind of the story is not pure mainstream Hollywood. They do have some Chinese, the pure Chinese elements in it. It's from ancient China, and it's amazingly understood by the filmmakers of Mulan. So I think it works. But I don't think it's, I really didn't read too many reviews, but I know some Chinese audience, they think it's too American. But I think we do have enough space for the discussion. That's good. Co-production might be difficult, but Chinese stories, I think they're there, they just need to be taught.
So now you've made a movie in both China and England. What has been the difference in production? As you said, the second one, you didn't have that much with picking the actors, but there was a lot of time with children. Are there any different approaches that you think China has to cinema that you really enjoyed that you maybe didn't get to do when you were filming Susu?
I think my experience might be slightly different from others, because like for Susu, it's almost the same as any UK-based first-time filmmakers. We experience all of the difficulties of like from the finance stage to casting to everything. And also a lot of filmmakers like me, we choose to do horror for the first movies, because maybe to any other genre, like sci-fi, you need a big money. And for romantic story, comedy, and maybe you need a big star. Then moving to the second film in the UK, in London, you are not like the first time, then people will trust you more, then maybe easier to get finance and more power to cast maybe someone with a name. Then that's how things go. But to me, because at that time I came back to Beijing because of COVID, then my plan was changed. I didn't get to make a remarriage, and I end up as a Legend of Ocean. I'm commissioned by a studio. Then to me, it's my first time again. So I got two first films, I would say. That means you don't have too much power. And it happened to me again. When I say I don't have too I don't have the final decision to use some of the cast because it's a commercial film, will go to cinema. They cast, or say they invest the named actors. And to me, okay, I'm very lucky to have a chance to work with them. That's it. Yes, because they are named stars. But the experience working with them, to be honest, is brilliant. And you know why they became famous, because they are good. We don't have too much time to do, no time, zero time to do rehearsal at all, but they can still do it correctly on set, on film set. So next time, I still would like to win some rehearsal time so you can make the final things much better on screen. But this time I don't have the luxury. But still, it's not too bad. It's because they are.
Yeah, and you get experiences from everything. I'll look forward to seeing everything that you continue to do. And finally, we always ask this question because this is a podcast where we talk about women in film. Is there a woman working in the industry who inspires you that you'd like to give a shout out to? A director, a writer, a friend?
Sally Porter. I like Sally Porter a lot. Luckily, I went to one of the screening events with her Q&A. So I actually saw her in person, and she's so elegant. And she was very kind and nice and answered my questions. So I was deeply encouraged. And also at that time, I was writing my London-based story about an immigrant family called The Remarriage. And at that time, I was inspired by Sally Porter's The Party. So if you remember, The Party is about the conflicts between a very small friends group. And to me, it's also, to me, The Remarriage is about an event happened, like a stage drama, and people, they fight to each other, and they are a very small circle of relatives. So yeah, I think thanks to her, and not only because she's a female director, but also the work just encouraged me to write something with observation.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, no, I love her work. And thank you so much for sitting down with us today, sharing your story, your insight, perspective on Chinese cinema and working in the UK and everything that you've learned from picking out sea lions. That is amazing.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be asked. It's out of blue, but I've seen your website. The podcast, I think, is doing amazing things to female filmmakers, because we don't have much resource. And I think we do need a community, and we need a platform like what you're doing here now.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Making It Women in Film is hosted by Malin Evita, produced in collaboration with her and Redeeming Features. Our production supervisor is Ruth Aitken. Research is by Lauren San Miguel. Shania Bethune and Abby Weiss are our production assistants. If you enjoy our show, please remember to subscribe and leave a review. You can also support the show by posting about us on your social media and following us on Instagram at Making It Women in Film. If you have any questions or feedback, DM us or email us at miwif.feedback@gmail.com. For more, visit womeninfilm.co.uk or redeemingfeatures.co.uk. Everything will be linked down in the show notes. Thank you, and we'll see you next Tuesday for another episode of Making It Women in Film.